Welcome to the Global Gaming Business Podcast, where you hear about the business of the casino entertainment industry from the people who make it happen. I'm Roger Gross, the publisher of Global Gaming Business, and this week we feature a discussion with Michael Levin, who is leaving Las Vegas Sands after 6 years as president and chief operating officer. Levin recounts what he believes were the successes of the company over that time and what challenges remain. Michael Levin is stepping down at the end of the year as president and COO of Las Vegas Sands. At press time, there had been no announcement of a successor, but whoever is named will be measured against a very successful executive. Levin, who has been on the board of Las Vegas Sands, was asked to take over as COO when the company was floundering. The once valuable stock had slumped to less than $2 per share, and the company had run out of money to fund its Asian expansion. Levin stepped in and engineered a financial turnaround that is remarkable. The stock price this month was around $60. The final Macau casino will open next year, the Parisian, and the Las Vegas Sands convention properties are more successful than ever, with strong revenue still reported in Singapore. Levin will remain on the board of LVS and other corporations and charities, and will often be mentioned as one of the strongest gaming executives in recent years. He spoke with me at his offices in the Venetian in Las Vegas earlier this month. Mike Levin, thanks for joining us on the GGB podcast. It's unfortunately probably the last time we'll talk as a member of you, as a member of the industry. So I'm a little bit verklempt about that, but. But I've really enjoyed discussing things with you over the years, and found you to be very forthright. So I really wanted to touch base with you before you left. So I'm glad we could do it.
Well, thank you, Roger. It's a pleasure to be here. I'll still be connected from a board point of view.
Sure, right.
With not only Las Vegas Sands, but with Hersha Hospitality, where I'm on the board. So I'm still really in the industry, and I still do things with the hotel sales and marketing organization and others.
Right.
So there'll be some stuff that'll be around.
But as long as we can still...
But I won't be important enough to talk to you or whatever.
You'll always be important enough to me. And, I always enjoyed our time, so I'll continue to talk to you. You know, when you first signed on, as COO and president of LVS, you did it as a favor to your friend Sheldon Adelson. And how long did it take you to realize it was going to be, more than a short-term favor? And what is it now, 5 years?
Well, actually, by the time I leave in December, it'll be 2 months short of 6 years.
Okay, yeah.
The original contract was for 2 years, mm-hmm. and we had two extensions.
Right.
It was a favor for Sheldon, to try to help Sheldon. It was also a favor to myself, of mm-hmm. course, too.
Right.
I think I came here, as Miriam said to me, come and help us fix the company.
Yeah.
And she didn't define exactly what she wanted fixed,
right.
but it was to help, write the company,
right.
put the company back and execute Sheldon's visions. And it's a job that never ends, really.
Sure,
I mean,
right.
you when you're in the op, there are two different definitions that you go. If you're in the development business, mm-hmm. it has a start and an ending.
Right.
If you're in the operating business, it never ends.
Yeah.
It's every day. Mm-hmm. Every day there's something, and the successes for me and for others here will continue to operate, and Sheldon will continue to be the visionary.
Right. Right. No question. Now, you mentioned you came in to fix the company. Things weren't in great shape when you got here. The stock price, I think, was in the single digits. The recession was hitting, the Las Vegas properties really hard. What was your strategy in those days to kind of right the ship?
Well, I think there were three significant strategies that mm-hmm. we had to do. The first and foremost is we had to get our costs under control in Macau,
right.
in Asia, and in Las Vegas. The second we had to do was a plan to essentially monetize some of our Macau assets
mm-hmm.
in order to develop cash for the company, which was
right.
the objective there. That's when we sold off 21% of 29% of Macau to a public entity.
Mm-hmm.
And the third was to get Singapore open properly
right.
so that it could start to generate funds for us
mm-hmm.
to be able to finance the completion of two or three more properties in Macau. So that was the combination of strategies
mm-hmm.
to do. And what we had to do was put together the various people, the human resources, right, to get those things done within the legacy systems that existed in the business.
Right.
And there were very clear strategies. Like all strategies, they're easy to put on paper, but the difficulty is the human execution of it.
Right, exactly.
And frankly, I think we actually moved faster than I thought we would have, mm-hmm, because we actually found those opportunities to be better than I thought they would have been when I came in.
Right. Mm-hmm. Now, you mentioned the human resources. I mean, Ms. Rattleson talked about the difficulty of finding those people when we spoke with them at G2E. Just how do you go about finding these people? Because like you say, they're kind of a needle in a haystack, I guess.
Well, the interesting thing about the whole story of this company in turning around the financial situation, mm-hmm, was I sourced all the people who I knew from previous positions that I was in. So I had a number of them were retired.
Right.
I took them off the beach. Mm-hmm. A number of them had been, mm-hmm, involved with me in two or three different companies where we had similar situations to do on the non-gaming side of the,
right,
business. And so I put together, I guess what you call a SWAT team of, mm-hmm, people, and I was calling people in different countries and different situations, different nationalities, people who I'd worked with. So we put together a team of about five or six different people, and we went property by property, restructured the operating part of the business, uh-huh, used a lot of the people who were here at the time as well, and managed to get very significant reductions in operating costs, which helped our EBITDA.
Sure.
And in Macau in particular, where we were overstaffed dramatically, we got that in order, and then we were able to generate enough EBITDA in Macau to be able to take the company public. Mm-hmm. And so one thing sort of led to another.
Right.
And then we had to redo the management team in Singapore as well. They were not getting it done. Mm-hmm. There were lots of things left for the opening. We brought in people there who,
right,
could get the place open. And by a year from the time I entered, 1 month after, in 13 months, we opened a portion of Singapore, and in 16 months, I think it was, we, mm-hmm, opened the whole of Singapore. So by that time, the company had a very different position.
Right.
And also we did some financings. There was a number of new people here, including a new CFO who was here at the time, mm-hmm, who really helped in getting that part of the business organized.
Right.
It sounds simple, but we really were focused on those three or four items to get done, and that's how we did it.
Right, right. Well, it's hardly simple. I mean, just the construction alone in Singapore was incredibly difficult.
Well, yeah. Singapore was very interesting because the government's very deeply involved, mm-hmm, in Singapore, and everything needed government approval. And we were way behind. We didn't have a strategy for the route, for the Sky Park, what, mm-hmm, was going to be up there. Certain restaurants weren't contracted for. We didn't have the art museum finished, or the museum finished, and we didn't have the relationship there of how to run it. And there were lots of other things that were open. One of the floors in the MICE Center wasn't completed.
Mm-hmm.
So we really put together a lot of effort to get that open. Mm-hmm. And frankly, the opening in April of 10 was not the best opening we've ever had. There were a lot of things not finished.
Sure.
But by the time we got to June of 10, we were off and running, and that place in the first 8 months did about $700 million of EBITDA.
Right.
So it really was a massive amount of, mm-hmm, injection of capital to the company.
Right. And in Macau, you know, you built one place after another, and you actually had to put the Sands Cotai on hiatus for a while.
That's right.
That must have been a difficult choice at that point.
Well, Cotai Central, which is the two Sheraton Towers, the Holiday Inn and the Conrad, which weren't even the Holiday Inn and Conrad,
right,
at that time.
Right.
That's a really interesting story also. we're management contracts, and we stopped the construction on, mm-hmm, those because we didn't have the capital.
Right.
And they weren't financed. But by getting Macau public, by getting the money coming in from Singapore, we were able to finance the completion of those properties.
Mm-hmm.
Then we changed the names on the Holiday Inn Conrad situation from Shangri-La to Holiday Inn Conrad, changed the deal, mm-hmm, from a management contract to a franchise.
Right.
And which I had, which because of my previous experience,
sure,
I was able to get Hilton and Holiday Inn, mm-hmm, to do those within hours.
Right.
with no line, just call the CEOs and I got it done.
Yeah.
So, you know, you look back at that, it's, once again, not for an everyday person, it would be complex, but but when Shangri-La dropped out, which is a very interesting story, actually, it'll make my book sometime.
Right.
Of course. But within 24 hours, I had both the Conrad name and the Holiday Inn name attached to it and the deal done.
Right.
And we shook hands on the deal.
Sure.
So, and then they opened just a couple of years ago and made Macau what it is,
right,
along with whatever.
And of course, that produced more revenue for your company because you didn't have a management contract.
That's just
a franchise.
That's right. We get the ownership of it and we just pay the fees. But and also, amidst this, we also opened Bethlehem after I came.
Right.
We had problems in that opening.
Mm-hmm.
We had to restructure Bethlehem a little bit also, and it took a little while for that to turn to where it was a profitable venture. So we couldn't leave that out. The big difficulty we've had has been turning Vegas.
Mm-hmm.
That's been the toughest one.
Right.
A couple of reasons for that. I think that the supply-demand condition of Vegas was really in bad shape. It's come back now from a demand standpoint, but rates have not returned to where they should be. They're getting better,
right,
but they're still not at 2007 levels. Mm-hmm. And what most people don't realize about Las Vegas is it's not a casino-dependent organization anymore. It's not a casino-dependent situation.
Mm-hmm.
It's really a room rate. Room rate is as important as the casino because the margin of profitability on room rate is so high when you're dealing with these large buildings.
Mm-hmm.
And so we've struggled with that. And we did contain our costs here well. We managed well on that basis, but we were not able to build the revenue as fast as I would like, and I think we're a couple of years behind from doing where we should be here. But considering that 90% of our profitability comes from overseas, we didn't focus enough on these buildings, which we're now trying to refocus on.
Right.
And the next administration, I think, will spend a lot more time doing that. But it's hard when you're doing, you know, basically 9% level less, about 7% of your EBITDA coming from, less than 7% of your EBITDA coming from the Vegas to have people focus on.
Right. Well, you had to focus on kind of low-hanging fruit when you came on, and then now the next administration is going to have to drill down a little deeper.
Yeah, I think, and I tell you, Roger, in all honesty, I think that's a tougher job.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I think it's, I've done a lot of these kind of things previously, where companies needed to be turned or helped dramatically.
Mm-hmm.
This company needs to be plussed as opposed to turned.
Right.
And that's a tougher job, really.
Yeah. And is that kind of what you're doing in Pennsylvania? I mean, you announced you were going to sell it last year, and then recently you said, no, now we're going to put more development into it. And, of course, Mark Giuliano is there, a great executive.
Yeah, I think we don't know yet exactly what we're going to do there. The risk in Pennsylvania is if something happens in North Jersey or New York. And we're sort of carefully going forward with some of those announcements about whether we're going to expand the room facilities or the convention facilities. Mm-hmm. We're pretty happy with where Pennsylvania is. It should do, you know, in $125 to $150 million of EBITDA there. So we're getting a decent return on our investment. It's not the kind of return you get in Asia.
No.
but it's a good enough. When I tell people, we happen to have an intercontinental convention here, and I'm telling people some of these numbers, you know, you look at some of these hotel companies, they don't do in 1 year what we do in 2 months. And they have thousands of hotels.
Sure, right.
but I think we're going to step quietly there until we know what's going to go on in terms of the future of that area. But we're very happy with the product. The product's really good.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's a nice. If every regional casino looked like that, I think most of those casinos would do much better.
Yeah.
But they can't invest the kind of money that we invested in that building.
Right. Well, you're the leading casino in Pennsylvania right now, revenue-wise.
Yeah.
So
We're doing fine.
Yeah, no question.
We're doing fine.
I guess you're taking that kind of same approach to the Asian expansion concept. I mean, you're taking it step by step and just seeing what's going on over there.
Well, the difficulty in Asia is that you don't control the decision. I mean, in Vietnam, Korea, and Japan, which are the three countries we've really been working in, it's all about the political environment and whether or not in Korea they'll let locals play in the kind of facilities we want to build, whether in Vietnam they'll let locals play, and regardless of what currency restrictions are and things like that, assuming you can solve those problems. And in Japan, just getting through the diet, it's like getting through my diet.
Sure, exactly.
You know, it's hard every day.
Hard every day.
So it's I think if any of those countries go, Las Vegas Sands will get, for sure, will get a shot at it mm-hmm. because of our financial strength, which is interesting to say after 5 years.
Sure.
And also our capability, because mm-hmm. all of them want what we have provided in Singapore and in Macau, and even in Las Vegas, so and in Bethlehem, for that matter. They want that, and I think we're, if not the best deliverer of it, we're certainly rated as high as anybody else.
Right, right.
So we'll get a shot at it, but you don't know whether it's going to happen.
You never know. Yeah, exactly. Well, one of the things I liked when we first met is I asked you how you worked with Sheldon, and you explained to me you waited till the end of the day to get the issues that you really wanted him to concentrate on. You know, is that still the way to get to him and to get him to focus on an issue that you think is important?
Well, I think Sheldon has an incredible mind, an incredible brain, and deals in lots of complications. I think timing with anybody of Sheldon's category as a boss, for mm-hmm. example, is very important because you can never underestimate the thought process he's going to put on any decision you want to make or any suggestion you want to make. Sometimes you'll get an answer immediately, no, or sometimes I like it, go right. ahead. But oftentimes he'll think about it,
mm-hmm.
and it may take days
yeah.
To come up with the answer. He wants to convince himself it's the right situation.
Right.
But what you learn about Sheldon in particular is that he's not really the black and white person you think he is.
Yeah.
He's complicated and consequently he really wants to feel that he's making the right decision.
Mm-hmm.
And oftentimes if it's a complex decision, it'll take time to get through.
Sure.
And sometimes you know intuitively he doesn't want to do it.
Mm-hmm.
So you may come back to him once or twice if you really feel passionate about it. Then all of a sudden what will happen to you is that you'll think, well, gee, you know, maybe you're not right.
Right, yeah.
Maybe he is right, because mm-hmm. he's right most of the time, and then you won't do it.
Right, yeah.
So it requires discipline.
Mm-hmm.
It requires a lot of discipline to work with Sheldon. But at the end of the day, you have to admire some of the incredible talent he has in terms of laying out buildings, looking at floors, understanding the bigger picture of things.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And yet he works by looking at the daily numbers every time,
right.
but that takes 5 minutes.
Yeah, right.
And then the rest of the thought process goes on to something else.
Okay. You know, you've had a great career in the hospitality industry even before you got here. So where does the Las Vegas Sands experience stand when you look at your entire career, the entire works that you've done?
Well, I think this is the pinnacle of any of the experiences I've had
mm-hmm.
because I think this was the toughest situation going in
right.
With the most iconic chairman I've mm-hmm. had. I've had plenty of chairmen,
sure, right.
but the most iconic chairman and understanding him and how to get things done. Plus, there were legacy systems here in the way of doing business that were difficult to overcome
mm-hmm.
too. But I think at the end of the day, the thing about this is the most visible experience I've had in terms of the public
right.
or whatever. So, for want of a better word, the most infamous experience.
Right.
I don't think you ever really stop learning what you're doing.
Sure.
But I will say this: had I not done what I had done before,
mm-hmm.
I don't think I would have been successful here.
Yeah. Yeah.
When I look back in terms of what I've done in the past, in terms of change, in terms of executing, in terms of the people, the human part of the enterprises that I learned along the way, I was able to apply so much of that in this situation and then learn how to do it, because I wasn't a gaming guy. I had casinos before, as I think I told you the last
right, yeah.
time,
mm-hmm.
in Aruba and
right.
Puerto Rico and things like that, but it's not the same business in Macau, of course,
right.
it's something
sure.
totally different. So I think this is I call this the pinnacle. I think
mm-hmm.
this was the top of Everest.
Right. Right.
And in terms of financial results, certainly the greatest amount
sure,
of financial
right.
results. The company is just an incredible cash machine today and had that capability.
Right.
So, I mean, I sort of just rode that, the great theory,
right.
you know, but I believe that we could have been even much more successful had things been better in the earlier going.
Sure.
Because
okay.
we could have had three more hotels already open in Macau 2 years ago.
Right, yeah.
In yeah. 7 and 8 and whatever.
Sure.
But even then, even with that, the company today is very solidly successful financially.
Yeah, yeah, no question. Well, it must be very gratifying because it was in such bad shape when you came in, and now it's, like you say, it's the biggest capitalized gaming company
yeah.
in the world.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing, really, when you think about that. But I think, you know, at the end of the day, if it weren't the biggest capital company, it's still an incredible company. And I mean, just the size of our assets and the way the assets produce, there's nothing quite like it anywhere.
Right.
And so it's very, you know, there was an article the other day that called us a blue chip company in the casino business.
Yeah.
And but I mean, it still needs to be managed and whatever. But I think the company, for want of a better word, is very safe. Mm-hmm. I mean, very secure. And I think no matter who runs it at my level or Sheldon's level someday, whether they build from here or not, it's going to continue to be a very successful financial instrument.
Right. Okay. Do you have any advice for your successor?
Well, I think the biggest advice I can give to the successor is, number one, be patient.
Mm-hmm.
And number two, be ready. We call it Sheldon Ready here.
Yeah, right, exactly.
And it's a famous statement, and it's very hard to teach people that, because mm-hmm. lots of people will walk in to Sheldon and not have the information, and he will challenge you to have it.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to do your homework here.
Right.
And you can be intuitive, but when you're presenting to Sheldon, you have to have the rationale
yep.
very solid in your mm-hmm. mind where you're going. The other thing about it is, I think that one has to be concerned that the people who lead these buildings,
mm-hmm.
who run these buildings, are critical to your success.
Right.
And the corporate staff that work for you are critical to your success
sure.
because you can't do this
no.
alone. I mean, this is a big business. Mm-hmm. Even though there's a few assets, it's a big business, and you're very, very dependent. So make sure you have the right people in the right spot, which
right.
is all of our goals anytime.
Mm-hmm. Great. So what's next for you? You mentioned some board positions certainly here and with some other companies.
Well, I'm moving back east. I'll be in Boca Raton in the winter,
okay.
and I'll be in Atlanta the rest of the year. I've taken back on the challenge of going back to the aquarium in Atlanta.
Right.
I'll
mm-hmm.
be the chairman and CEO there. It will not be full-time. It's a volunteer position.
Sure.
It's fallen a little bit off since I've left in 6 years, so I want to do that. I will... I'm heading the planning committee for Birthright Israel, which is something Sheldon put me on, which is his favorite,
mm-hmm.
Where he donates a lot of money. And I'm probably going to get involved with a hospitality school in Atlanta.
Okay.
Kennesaw State University has asked me to participate there, so I'll probably do some work there. I'm on I'm co-chair of the campaign for my high school in Boston. I do work at Tufts University. I'm chairman of the Job Creators Alliance, which is another nonprofit.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a trustee of the Marcus Foundation. I'm on the Las Vegas Sands Board. And I'm on the Hershey Hospitality Board. I won't do any more business boards.
Right.
I got a few other things. I'm on the Energy Security Council for the United States. I do stuff like that. So I've got a lot of... In fact, I asked my secretary the other day, would you please make up a list of all my commitments?
Right.
She said, you don't want to see them. You're going to be exhausted.
Right, exactly.
So
right.
I got yeah. a lot of stuff to do. I'm not going to sit around. I'm going to... If I can maintain my golf handicap, I'll be happy.
Right.
I don't want to lose it. But and I want to spend some time with my grandchildren. I mean, I have four of them that are 15,
mm-hmm.
one that's 12, and one that's going to be 3 in April. And I've been away for 5.5 years, and I don't
yeah.
see them that often.
Sure.
So
that's right.
I want to spend more time with them.
Well, Mike, we've always respected the work you've done here in Las Vegas Sands and the position you've taken in the industry, and we're going to miss you. But like you say, you're not going to be gone too far away, so we'll still talk to you.
Thank you, Roger. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for joining us on the Global Gaming Business Podcast. If you want to learn more about the issues discussed today or anything about the gaming industry, visit our website at ggbmagazine.com. For weekly updates on the industry, subscribe to GGB News, the only weekly e-news magazine dedicated to the breaking news of the gaming business. To see a sample issue, visit ggbnews.com. That's it for today. Hope you enjoyed the interview, and we'll see you next week on the Global Gaming Business Podcast.